Oops, I forgot to start all the cool intros in that. Let me hit that, and then we'll get on with the show.
So, want to talk about cars? Ferrari, GTO, Bentley, CRX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority, where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
Now we got our groove going.
Hey, there we are.
Yeah. See, I'm used to doing this solo, and Derek throws me off when he decides to show up for a show every now and then.
Hey, I showed up. Look at that. Should I leave now?
I don't know.
Nope.
Let's get some comments on that. If we want Derek to leave, just let me know, and
I'll
bump him. Good to have you back, Derek. Is everything going well? I know you had. We told everybody you had some an emergency pop up 2 weeks ago, and everything worked out from that one.
Yes.
And then you were at the NAMMS convention last week trying to gain knowledge.
That is correct, John. Yep. Everything turned out fine. As everyone knows, there are children in this house over here, at least our longtime listeners know. And when your almost 4 year old decides to spike a, almost 106 degree fever 20 minutes before the show goes live, you got to make certain decisions. So I had to miss that 2 weeks ago for that emergency. And as you said, last week at the NAMM conference, which was held at the Savoy Automobile Museum down in Cartersville, Georgia. And I would say if any of our listeners out there are in that area or traveling to that area, highly recommend stopping by the Savoy to see everything they have going on there, but also visit their brother sister museums. I don't know what to call it. They're sibling museums in Cartersville there, the Booth Western Art Museum and the Telus Science Museum. They're both fantastic collections, varying topics being discussed at each of those, Western art and science, but it is it's a great little town, and the conference was fantastic.
Yeah, I see the Savoy on the way to the Mountain House every now and then, and her and I are heading that way at the end of next month. So I've put it on my list to swing by. Eventually we might get to swing by it. We see it. It's just you want to get to the destination, or I always want to get to the destination, and the stuff in between always seems to suffer. But
well, sometimes the destination needs to be the stuff in between. isn't that what life is? Like, we all know there's a destination, right? There's an end date. We have an expiration date. So we got to make it about the stuff in between, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, life has a destination, but once you get to that destination, you don't get to go anywhere else, as far as we know.
Exactly. That's why you got to make it life about the things in between. You got to make it about the journey.
But I just want to get to the mountains and sit on the deck and smoke a cigar and look at the trees and hope I don't burn down the forest.
Just make sure you check with Smokey the Bear before.
I did bop down to Florida over the weekend, though. Her and I went down for a couple of days, hung out on the beach, put a picture on my personal Facebook page, and everybody makes fun as I'm wearing my long pants and my slip-in Skechers. I just don't do sand in my toes.
Do you have your shorts, sweatshirt on as well, like a hoodie, hood up, tightened down?
No, I was actually, let's see here, when I was there, I can't remember what, I usually have a t-shirt and some sort of, I want to say Hawaiian style bowling shirt on over it.
That seems like John.
Yeah. Hey, I did get the swimming suit out of the closet and did pack it and did take it with me.
The tag stayed in the suitcase. Tag's still on it from 20 years ago. It's three sizes too small.
No, I actually own two that I've never worn. But never here, never there. Just trying to think of anything else going on that was exciting. Not really. Please excuse my voice and maybe an occasional sniffle or cough. Allergies have been kicking my ass since last Friday. I had to enjoy that while I was in Florida, and it hasn't gotten much better. Well, now that we're all caught up on where we've been and where we're going and all that fun stuff, it's time to get messy for a change.
I'm glad we got the fun stuff out of the way.
Yeah. As I said in the description, we're going to go there. We've tried to avoid it. We've tried to avoid it, but...
We try to avoid it, but every episode it sneaks in some way because it's the hot topic.
Yeah, we're just going to... Well, we've got two topics to talk about here. One's going to be EVs. One is EV adjacent and a tragedy. Which do we want to do? Do we want to do the tragedy and then jump into the politics? Because that's where people will leave. Or do we want to do the politics and then everybody leaves by the time of the tragedy?
Wherever you want to go. Wherever you want to go.
Well, I've wondered this. This guy named Elon Musk. He debuted in 2017, 2018. This thing called the Cybertruck. We won't even mention the Tesla Roadster that was debuted at the same time. And in that presentation, they showed the, quote, bulletproof glass on the Cybertruck, which, of course, broke when he threw a rock or something at it. But they fixed that. And it's a pretty... Tesla uses a very strong glass in their vehicle. Do you see a reason that we should have bulletproof glass or indestructible glass all the way around on our vehicles? Is there a practical reason for that? Question to you, Derek.
Okay, I was just waiting to make you kept kind of dragging it out. I want to make sure you wrapped everything up there.
We've been doing this for 5 years.
I know, and I still haven't figured out when you're going to stop talking. Absolutely not, John. I do not believe that there should be impenetrable, unbreakable, bulletproof, heavy-duty glass all the way around your vehicle unless... you, for some reason, absolutely 100% need that, i.e. you are a world leader, you are someone who needs protection from assassination attempts, things like that. Yes, we can understand the bulletproof vehicles that the American government uses for presidential motorcades and things like that, but in a standard production, vehicle that is being sold to the general public, 1000% no, because it brings up other issues. And I think I know exactly where you're going with this.
Well, I'm taking a long road to get there because I'm good at that.
Yep.
And we do know that Mercedes and BMW and Audi, and I believe a few other manufacturers, offer protection packages on their cars. So you can order your 7 Series BMW and choose between three levels of reinforcement. But you're making that conscious decision and you know it's there. But when you're going out buying your normal vehicle, you don't think of things like that. I mean, there are sales pitches. I can say, if you live in a bad neighborhood or, you're parked in a sketchy area at a concert or a football game, there might be some reason behind that. But as I drive down this road and back to my Lotus 7 of infatuation, which obviously there's really no glass there, and looking at all the Lotus 7 replicas, if you build a replica or if you build a car in Australia, they do a chassis rigidity test. They want to make sure the chassis is rigid and has minimal flex. However, they have a maximum also that if you go above that, you can't operate that vehicle on the road either, because your car needs to have some sort of give in crumple zones for your protection and for the other person's protection. Mm-hmm. And it seems Elon doesn't comprehend either one of these things, because he's touted very much with the Cybertruck, with its bulletproof glass, and everything else on the road is going to succumb to it if it hits you. I think that's inexcusable. I mean, I think that's wrong. And it's going to be interesting to see the lawsuits that come out of that. Because I heard today, listening to Matt Ferris' podcast, you know, they were checking out a Cybertruck, and they said the edges on some of that stainless steel, they were able to cut cardboard with. Mm-hmm. And felt that if you just brushed up against, say, the front nose of this truck, you're going to slice your arm open. That's irresponsible. And what really got me thinking about this is the unfortunate case, and this happened, well over a month ago, and the article started coming out about 10 days ago, about... it's Mitch McConnell's sister-in-law, Angela Cho. The story between Angela, she's a billionaire and was a CEO of a major shipping conglomerate. And her husband is also a billionaire in his own right, does a lot of investing, a lot of venture capital. And during the pandemic, the Chos were kind of cooped up in New York and didn't quite like that. And for some reason, a lot of millionaires and billionaires have been moving to Texas. And somebody convinced them, hey, you need to check out Texas. And they went down and they bought a 900-acre ranch. Raise cattle and everything, and you know, they still had their business dealings, but they're billionaires and they're jets, they can fly wherever, it really doesn't matter where they're located. And this was a nice vacation retreat, or is a nice vacation retreat. Well, Angela, while her husband was in Dubai on business, invited 10 of her high school friends over, or college friends over, and put them up at the inn, which is their 10-bedroom guest house on the estate. And she had been showing them around and enjoying her time with them, having a good, you know, girls' night out. I mean, guys have their guys' night out, girls have their girls' night out, and, you know, frolicking and telling stories and probably drinking some wine, etc. And again, well, Angela decided that she was going to go back to the main house and check on her son. So she said about 10 o'clock at night, she said, you know, goodbye to all the ladies and exited the house and got into her Tesla, Model X SUV. And Tesla has this screwy transmission shifter system, and it's basically swipe. You swipe to reverse, you swipe to drive. And Angela has had problems with this, and it was a known problem. You know, she knew of the problem. And she's not alone. A lot of Tesla drivers have issues with this. Tesla transmissions also now have AI integrated. And that just sounds something great. AI into your transmission. Oh. And it anticipates by the way you park and by the way the vehicle stopped, what gear it needs to be in. And sometimes it'll decide you're wrong. We do not know if this is the case with Angela. But she had to do a three-point turn to leave the inn to go back to the main house. And at some point in this turn, the car ended up in reverse instead of drive and backed itself into a pond. And Angela, assuming being a, you know, billionaire, probably didn't take time to listen to the delivery and all the, read the owner's manual and stuff. And did not know the manual safety release on the doors to get the doors open. If the car shut down and there was an electrical issue, which there very well could be, backing into a pond, and panicked and called her guardhouse saying that she had backed into the pond and her car was sinking and she needed help. The car continued to sink. People arrived, rescuers arrived 28 minutes after the car began to sink. And they, you know, they proceeded and they tried everything they could to break the glass with hammers and, you know, anything you can think of to break the glass. And they even went as far, I've even read articles to say that if you took one of those little glass breaker tools, the ones that they say keep in your glove box, Tesla glass has a coating on it that renders those useless. Mm-hmm. So it's impossible to break the glass out of this car. And of course, until everything pressurizes, you can't open the doors. And of course, you can't open the doors unless you know where the manual releases are, because the car shut itself down to protect itself from short circuiting with the water. And this small town where her ranch is located, the rescue workers arrived and the tow truck drivers arrived. And first, they weren't familiar with a water rescue of an electric vehicle. And they were rightfully concerned about electrocution, which in the overall scheme and when it's done and you look back on it, wasn't an issue. The second issue is when the tow truck got there, its main winch cable wasn't long enough, so they had to get a second winch cable. By the time they extracted Angela's car 60 minutes later and performing CPR for the next 47 or 48 minutes, she unfortunately passed away. That's the long story, but that gives you kind of the details. You know, technology's great, but I find this inexcusable. I mean, if this was Karen from Ohio who did this, you might not have heard about it. It's unfortunate that Miss Chow died because of this. But it's maybe fortunate that she did, and maybe some people are going to start looking at some of this irresponsibility of some of these manufacturers when it comes to cars, and especially Elon Musk and Tesla, with him using the general public as his R&D department, with his self-driving, with this screwy transmission. And I believe the Cybertruck, the transmission gear selector is on the roof. Or on the ceiling. Whatever. I mean, I have issues with my mini transmission that's just push the lever forward, push the lever backwards, and push a button in on the side. You know, I like my Ford. Drive, reverse, neutral, or park, reverse, neutral, and L1, L2, whatever. I don't understand why we have to get so complex and screwy with the way we engage gears. Yeah, push buttons might be nice on the dashboard, and that keeps things clear, gives you a little bit more room for your cup holders. But why do we need this slide thing? Why do we need anticipation on the gear selection? I went long there, Derek. I'll be quiet in case now you want to say anything, but I'm appalled about what happened to Angela and really what I want to say these manufacturers are getting away with, but it really comes down to just one.
Yeah, no. As I said when you first asked the question, John, we don't need this kind of glass in vehicles for these exact situations. I don't care if it's, you know, water incident, a vehicle sinking. I mean, this could just as well have been a terrible collision on the highway and the car be on fire and someone panicking, not knowing how to, again, like you said, not knowing the override latches. You know, fire department gets there, can't shatter the glass. They don't know how to get into the vehicle. I mean, there's a lot of situations and circumstances where rescue teams need to break the glass of a vehicle to rescue the people inside from certain death. And that's just, these are some of the things that, you know, we've mandated a lot about automotive safety in this country since the 1960s and 70s. Ralph Nader and a number of other people made big pushes. You know, we can go back in history and look at the early safety cars and all of the talk that was being done in the 50s and 60s about this. We mandated a number of things. You know, the way the glass is done should be looked at because of situations like this. And you talk about the shifters. Everybody wants to be the next, like, cool factor in the car. Like, oh, look, at we can make our shifter a dial. Look, we can make ours push button. Look, we can make ours slide on the screen. It's not good because it's not standardized. Yes, there are many people that it does not, wouldn't bother in this world. Okay, there are people, you know, especially as we get younger generations driving and that are more used to computer systems than the older generations, all of that factor, I get it. But there is also a reason why Prindle, and for those that listen to the show that are of the younger generations, that's a shift pattern on an automatic transmission. Prindle was mandated as the kind of standardized shift of an automatic transmission so that accidents didn't occur when people were getting in different vehicles and shifting into the wrong gear. These things, in some cases, need to be thought about from a safety aspect so that we don't have incidents like this. Now, there were other factors at play in the incident that we talked about. You know, there's alcohol was a factor, things like that. But again, alcohol impacts you, but I'm sorry, you know, panic, the, you know, state of being in a flight situation from an incident impacts you just as much to where you panic and forget about safety features in your vehicle and how to open certain things. So although there was alcohol involved, she still would have been panicked. She still would have had a struggle to get out because she may not have remembered how to open doors, things like that. This is, in my opinion, ridiculous. We do not need bulletproof glass, shatter-resistant glass in a vehicle like this that regular people are going to be driving. It just, it's putting people's lives at risk. Like I said, it doesn't matter if it was, you know, the accidental driving into a pond. It could have been any accident where something was occurring that was going to take that person's life and a rescue crew could not get in to save them. That's inexcusable to me. That, and it falls to the manufacturer. It falls flat to the manufacturer.
An interesting side note to Angela Chow. We talked about her, and you said liability falls to the manufacturer. It might. But odds are we're not going to find out in this case.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Let me see. I can't remember.
I mean, she's related to politicians. I mean, yeah, we're not going to find anything out.
There is a bit of irony here. Her husband, venture capitalist Jim Breyer, is a early investor in Tesla.
Oh.
And is a present investor in Tesla. So I doubt he will be suing. You know, little turn of event, because if maybe he wasn't an investor, maybe we would find out a little bit of liability here. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure if, you know, we will, but, you know, that's kind of a little conjecture for me. When you were talking, you mentioned that we have these safety laws in place and these restrictions and these rules that come with automobiles. I learned something from, again, ironically, Matt Farah. I talk bad about Matt sometimes. I talk good, but I enjoy listening to him a lot. And he recently read a book and he brought it up today. He was having a conversation a lot about tech and vehicles. And he might be stealing some of our topic ideas because his today was like the top 10 stupid tech inventions put in vehicles and that. But he's referred to a book that came out in September of 2022 by Philip Koopman. And he wrote a book called How Safe is Safe Enough? Measuring and Protecting Autonomous Vehicle Safety. And what Philip alludes to this book is we think there's all these rules governing safety and that are going to take care of us and that we can't do this or we can't do that. There are no safety rules until something becomes unsafe, usually in the eyes of the court. So that's why Elon Musk can put full self-driving in his cars and call it whatever the hell he wants, because there's no law to prevent him from doing it until it kills enough people that a law is created. Mm-hmm. This is why he can put bulletproof glass standard in, or, you know, make these cars however he wants and make them with razor blade edges until there are laws that tell them he can't. Now, I question if he's actually got a razor blade on the front nose of the Cybertruck, how that gets around EU pedestrian safety regulations, but maybe it's because it makes contact above the knee. Just because it severs you off at the thighs, different story. But it's an interesting story that Matt's talked about with this book. It's available for $50 paperback on Amazon, and I think it's gonna get ordered and go into my stack of books I need to read. I'm learning a lot from Farah and Tony Whatley that I really need to get in the habit of probably spending an hour a day reading.
Yeah, I agree. I've heard of that book. I haven't had a chance to get it and read it yet. But he's exactly right. I mean, it is that way. Safety things only come up when people get hurt enough and people sue, right? I mean, that's in any industry. I mean, again, we started out the show today talking about, you know, the fact that I have children in the house and, you know, that was the emergency 2 weeks ago. But even with toys, with children, it's the same thing. There are safety standards, but the only reason there are safety standards is because there weren't, and then a bunch of kids died. So now we have to make laws. And then, you know, there's not laws for everything. So now a whole bunch of other kids die because of something else. Now there's another law because there were lawsuits. And I'm not saying that everything needs to be regulated and, you know, but I think when it comes to some common sense things like, I don't know, unbreakable glass, that should be a no-brainer. That should just be a no-brainer, in my opinion, unless you're a business or a institution, whatever, government entity that needs to protect people or something you're moving. I don't know. To me, it's just that kind of stuff needs to be common sense in this world. I mean, we see car accidents every day. We see these incidents every day where emergency crews have to break glass and remove it from a vehicle to rescue people. Don't make your glass unbreakable and non-removable because it's just dumb. You're putting people's lives at risk.
Now, the salesman in me can tell you you want this car. It's got unbreakable glass. I mean, it's a $100,000 Tesla Model X with its falcon wing doors and everything. Or maybe that isn't. I get to Tesla models. Is that a Model Y? No, whatever. But
yeah, that one. The one with the thingies.
You park it in an undesirable area. Or you do park it at that football game or baseball game or hockey game. And you accidentally leave, you know, your Rolex in the center console and, a wad of hundreds on the driver's seat. And it falls out of your pocket as you get out of the car. Somebody walks by, sees it. They can't break into your vehicle and get it. Yeah, that's great. Sounds good. And it occurred to me, I saw a video. It was a short. I don't know if it was a Facebook short, Instagram short, YouTube short, whatever. And I don't know how real it is. But supposedly somebody had their C8 Corvette and the battery died. And they had no way to get into it. Again, this is another story. Somebody who never read the owner's manual. So while they were waiting for the tow truck to get there with a new battery or to jumpstart the car, they gave somebody a hammer and wrapped it in a towel. And or I guess maybe they already had the glass guy coming or something. And said, break the window out. And they beat and beat and beat on this window of this Corvette. And it scratched the tint, but the window never shattered. And it's going, is the thing bulletproof? Is it what? Maybe this glass is more common than we know. But maybe the law should be. And I'm good if you want to have unbreakable glass for the security reasons. But one, read your damn owner's manual and learn that you can actually open that door.
Yeah.
Even if the car has a dead battery.
But here's the thing, John, I'll back up because there's some really good videos out there. YouTube University, right? That's what everybody does.
Yeah.
But people also have to understand the actual structure and makeup of tempered glass, because there are a number of videos. A standard door window in a car is actually very difficult to break because of the way they're designed and the stress they're under when they're rolled up, the curvature of the glass, all of the factors that go into that. You can watch videos on YouTube where people will beat on a window and it will not break. There is a reason they tell you to make sure that when you're trying to shatter a window, a door window in a car, you always go low into one of the corners. It's where the stresses are at a point where they will actually shatter out. If you just try to hit the center of the window, it's almost like a drum. It actually gives a little bit and flexes, and it actually typically will not break unless you're really, really, really aggressive with it. And so, it's also the factor of having to, again, understand and read in an emergency situation how to break those windows out because of the way the car is designed.
Well, what I'm thinking is maybe this should be a test, from the National Highway Safety Institute. I mean, it's kind of important. I would assume Mrs. Chow isn't the first person to have passed away this way. Or been, say, trapped in the vehicle because of a fire, and then you can't break the glass out or anything. But the 2012-ish Mercedes SLS, with its gullwing doors, they had a concern of rollovers because this happened with the original 55-ish Mercedes 300 SL. That if the car rolls over, was a concern with DeLoreans and Lamborghinis and that too. You can't open the doors because they're part of the roof and the car is now laying on the roof. Or the scissor doors can't open vertically, however. But the SLS included explosive bolts that could be ignited or deployed and would blow the doors off the car. Kind of like they do the Saturn V capsule doors after the tragedy of 1963 with Gus Grissom and company. Mm-hmm. Maybe that needs to start being considered, that we have an explosive bolt or something, especially in these cars with electric doors. Yeah, we have a pull rope or something, but maybe we should have a fallback on the pull rope. Because if you're in a panic situation, your car's filling up with water and it's, you're screaming and worried about dying, getting into the right angle to pull on that rope and find that rope or a cord or cable might not be easy, but a button on, you know, in a hard to get to area, but easy to get to area might be a nice thing to have that would, it, you know, explode those bolts.
Actually, you know what we need? We don't need, you could put either explosive bolts or you could put an explosive charge somewhere that would blow one of the windows out. You could do that too. You know, even on the bulletproof stuff like that, there would probably be a way to blow a window out if you had the right setup. But we're overlooking something that we already have. I mean, we already have the explosive bolts, but we have airbags inside of our car. Why not make external airbags that you could detonate and it would turn the car into a flotation device and you'd just float there on top of the pond waiting for people to come get you?
Well, see, if she would have had a Rivian, Rivians are watertight.
Well, if she would have had a Cybertruck instead of the one she had, they're supposedly watertight too and can float.
I would question with the wonderful panel gaps that keep showing
up.
Well,
I agree. I'm just saying what Tesla says.
Yeah. Tesla says their gear selector works too.
No, but that's what the artificial intelligence told them.
But this has been a week to discuss the intelligence of the automotive world. Or maybe the people that are outside of the automotive world who think they understand the automotive world. And now we're shifting into the controversial topic that people will stop listening to us for.
Yay!
Oh, let me get the right window pulled up here.
Let me get mine pulled up here on my handy dandy second screen, i.e. my cell phone. Oh yeah, I'm ready. Bring it on, John.
I'm looking for it. I got all the text highlighted in it, but the window went away.
You know the three things you're never supposed to talk about in a car-related situation?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
No. Religion, politics, and what German automotive manufacturers did between 1933 and 1946. Three things to avoid.
I'm sorry, my article disappeared, but I have it right here now.
You didn't even appreciate that one, John? Come on.
I was kind of ignoring that because for some odd reason I had a conversation earlier
about German auto manufacturers during 1933 to 46.
I was watching a show that dealt, honestly, now that's the third time I've been listen to some sort of Nazi reference today. Matt Farah show, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the new TV show, and now Derek.
Yep.
I highlighted.
I tell you, you try to do a live stream.
Yes. 3 years ago, I set an ambitious target that half of all new cars and trucks sold in 2030 would be zero emission. Oh, sorry, I read that wrong because President Biden said that in a statement. 3 years ago, I set an ambitious target that half of all new cars and trucks sold in 2020 or 2023 would be zero emission. President Biden said in a statement, I brought together American automakers. I brought together American auto workers. Together, we have made historic progress. Hundreds of new expanded factories across the country, hundreds of billions in private investment, and thousands of good-paying union jobs. And we'll meet my goal for 2030 and race forward in the years ahead. One thing I got out of that paragraph, it brought together American automakers. It brought together American auto workers in making sure that 50% of the cars and trucks sold in 2023 would be zero emission. You see the group of people he left out?
Is that another question for me, or is that one of your
I figured I'd give you
rhetorical questions?
I figured I would give you an option to answer that.
Oh, I may not have been listening. Can I take a guess?
Mm-hmm.
The American people.
Well, I was going to say the American auto buyers, but
the American people. Yeah. The non-automotive worker and union American people.
Did I say that right? Thank you, Jason, for the compliment. Do you want to explain this a little bit? Give my voice a rest, or
do I want to explain this?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not, John?
I'll come back and correct you if you're wrong.
Yes. So, because John's probably done a lot more reading on this than maybe I have. But was it 3 months ago, or it was 3 months ago that this was voted on, right? Was it three?
Yeah, it was 3 months ago.
Three months. Thank you. So, 3 months ago, they tried to get this through the House. The ambitious new target to make half of all new vehicles sold in 2030 zero emissions vehicles, including battery electric, plug-in hybrid electric, or fuel cell electric vehicles. So it did not get through the House, i.e. it did not through all of Congress. And so what President Biden has done is signed an executive order yesterday. Yeah, he signed it yesterday. Yep.
That would be Wednesday, March 20th.
Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. And so basically this is now a executive order that is backing or giving power to the EPA and U.S. Department of Transportation to basically push this mandate forward with the American auto manufacturers. And John, I don't know if I've explained it as far as you want me to, but I'll go through some bullet points that are listed in this. President Biden believes it is time for the U.S. to lead in electric vehicle manufacturing, infrastructure, and innovation by investing in installing the first ever national network of electric vehicle charging stations, delivering point-of-sale consumer incentives to spur U.S. manufacturing and union jobs, financing the retooling and expansion of the full domestic manufacturing supply chain, and innovating the next generation of clean technologies to maintain our competitive edge. And, I will say, John, I'm going to say this, okay? Those four bullet points, I don't have a problem with, John. I don't have a problem with those. What I have a problem with is the ridiculously short timeline being given here.
2027? That's years away.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we only have 2025 cars on the market, and it's not like manufacturers plan a decade out.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Under the new regulations, which will be formally announced at a ceremony in Washington, D.C. later Wednesday afternoon, automakers will be forced to rapidly curb the emissions of greenhouse gases, hydrocarbons, nitrogen oxides, and particulate matter from new passenger cars, light trucks, and larger pickups and vans, beginning with the model year 2027. The one that strikes me interestingly enough here is particulate matter. They have recently done some studies, and the biggest polluter of the oceans, particulate matter, is automotive tire particulates. And with the average electric vehicle weighing more than 1,000 pounds more than a comparable ICE engine vehicle, they have found that additional 1,000 pounds creates 25% more particulate matter from passenger cars, or from tires, I guess. So obviously we're not going to be able to reduce all of these. Now, the statement I did hear, and this was listening to Maria in the morning on Fox News, and the video is on YouTube. You can catch it. They were told that we anticipate the electric vehicle will get lighter in this period of time and hence reduce or have equal particulate matter emanating from tires. They're anticipating. How about we deal in facts?
Yeah, and the fact is, right now, lithium-ion battery technology is basically at its max capacity. They have shoved as much energy into, you know, basically, you know, making those batteries produce as much energy as they possibly can. And unless there's a major breakthrough, there's not much more we can get out of these things without just packing more of them together, creating more weight for these vehicles. The big thing we need is a major breakthrough in some type of, you know, nano battery technology, which they're working on, and there has been some progress, but it's not where it needs to be to lighten the weight of these vehicles. And don't get me wrong here, I'm all for the development and, you know, progress of the automobile and the automobile industry, and, you know, moving in directions that, you know, if we can have cleaner burning fuel or, you know, zero emission vehicles, whatever it is, that's cool. That's great. There are things I don't like, you know, I never want to see us get to a point where we just have a bunch of pods running around moving people from place to place. I obviously someone that loves driving cars, and if, you know, my private vehicle was ever taken away from me, not cool. But this to me is about, again, just these government mandates that put pressure on industries to do something that's almost impossible to get done in the time frame. I mean, we have great scientists, we have great engineers, we have great people working behind all of this, but we have to be realistic. 2027, 2030, 2032, this is not a, you know, a reasonable timeline in any way. I mean, I want to read that one of the bullet points again, because, okay, it's 2024. Okay, it is 2024. And one of these bullet points is that they want to install the first ever national network of electric vehicle charging stations. You're telling me that by 2030, in 6 years, or heck, give it 10 years to 2034, that we could install an entire national network of electric vehicle charging stations, not only from the physical aspect of building those, but also, and I know this isn't part of the requirements of this for the car manufacturers, but looking at everything they're hoping to do, that alone, I mean, you look at the grid right now and how stressed it is in certain times. Now you're going to put a nationwide network of charging stations out there. There's even more stress. I mean, it's just all of this is, it's things that need to be done, but give it a reasonable timeline and a reasonable plan to get it done.
Well, I actually have some numbers pulled up on exactly what you're talking on charging stations.
Oh, good. Hopefully it validates my complaints. You're not gonna be like, you're wrong.
Well,
because if you are, I'm leaving now.
This report's from March 19th, so it's from a day before this officially was announced. This is how much EV charging the U.S. will need by 2030. It's not necessarily the electrical demand, but the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, the number of plug-in electric cars in the U.S. might reach 33 million by the year 2030, which if this mandate stays, which this is the political commentary, if Biden gets elected, I don't see it changing, will require a fairly vast expansion of charging infrastructure. The number of charging points is expected to reach 28 million units of various types, private, public, AC, and DC, in the same time frame, which I think's actually probably too many. 28 million for 33 million vehicles, because they all can't be plugged in at the same time.
Can I just interject here that if AC/DC was actually involved, this would be way cooler.
Be thunderstruck.
Exactly.
And the numbers they're predicting and how they're going to break this out, they feel that private L1 and L2 single family home chargers will consist by 2030 be 25,700,000 homes with chargers. There will be 570,000 charging ports, L2 private or L2 charging ports at multifamily homes. That seems like a very, very small number, considering I live in an apartment community and they're building multifamily homes around here like crazy. 490,000 private L2 charging ports at the workplace, which again, I think is extremely low. 1,070,000 L2 charging ports at multiple locations, such as, you know, gas stations, restaurants, and that. And then 182,000 public DC fast charging ports at multiple locations, which I would still think that's going to be low, especially if you're wanting people to convert and they don't understand how electric vehicles charge. One thing I've been thinking is on the electric vehicle front is if we have these public charging stations, and they're becoming more common, more gas stations are having them. Walmart's doing a concerted effort to install chargers at most of their stores. Mm-hmm. I would say Target will probably follow suit, and, you know, other retailers, and I can see grocery stores doing it and such, because it's a way to generate revenue. I guarantee you they're not free. You swipe your credit card, you go in and shop for an hour at Publix or Kroger or what, you know, Safeway or whatever your local grocery store is, and you charge. They're making a few bucks off of you in addition to the, you know, pounding you're getting with your groceries. But that would reduce, and multifamily home people would have to start strategically charging as this comes into effect and go, well, you know, I can't see an apartment complex having chargers for everybody. And I can't see, no matter what they do, getting people out of the charging stations. People will come home, plug in, and leave their car overnight. And even if there's, you know, I think some Tesla chargers and that have outrageous fees if you're plugged in for more than a certain amount of time and not charging. But it'll take a lot more education to the consumer on how to charge and how to efficiently charge. And, you know, when you charge an electric vehicle, you don't charge from, you know, 10% to 100% every single time. You know, you get down to about 30%, you charge back up to 60% or 70% and so on. You just, it's not fill up the tank. It's just add some gas or add some electrons. And it's taken 15 years to teach the early adopters to EVs to learn this and to become used to this. And now you're going to grab us as we walk into the dealerships by our throats and say, instead of buying this $24,000 internal combustion engine mid-sized car, you now need to buy this $52,000 electric mid-sized car. And those numbers are from one of these articles I read about the price disparity between these. And you go, excuse me, I can't afford a $52,000 car. Doesn't matter. We'll give you incentives. And let's go back to what you said about 3 months ago. Dealers were, over 3,000 dealers signed a letter to Congress asking them to vote against this bill because the average new car dealer likes to keep a 30 to 45 day inventory in stock. I.e. everything on the lot will turn every 30 to 45 days. Right now, almost every dealer is sitting on 1 year worth of 365 days worth of EV inventory. And to be honest, they can't give these things away. You take the $7,500 tax credit, and some of these EVs are having manufacturer incentives of $15,000 back on them. So they're taking $22,500 off the price, provided your income will allow you to get the $7,500 tax credit, which is a whole nother story. It's a no-win situation. I don't see how it's going to take place. And I didn't see in any articles that I was looking at today, but I swear I heard on a few of the news shows I've been watching. I traveled all week, so I've been, when I travel, I always watch MSNBC or Fox News in the morning. And they were saying that there's actually somewhere hidden in this thing that there's going to be a tax on used car sales for internal combustion engines. So now they're going to make the used car market, you'll pay $1,000 premium or a $2,000 premium. You basically pay a gas guzzler tax on every used car is sold. So the government's going to raise the price on your used cars, which I guess would be a way of funding all these chargers they're going to build and all these new nuclear power stations they're going to build and all these new, I don't know, solar farms. I don't know where we get electricity if we're not going to use coal, because if we use coal, then aren't we contributing to all these emissions that we're trying to eliminate? I'm lost. It's a mess.
Yeah, well, and I'm going to back up. So I was letting you talk there, John, for, you know, your rant.
45 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, that's how we pull off an hour show. John just talks. But I was just in Florida for Amelia and all that, right? And I was staying at a hotel, and there was a Jaguar, the F-Pace, the kind of like mid-sized SUV they've got out, all electric. And it's the first time I saw one, so it caught my eye in person. So, you know, it caught my eye, checked it out. And it was at the one parking spot that had a charger at this hotel in Jacksonville, Florida, near the airport. And, you know, I was coming back from dinner, and it was, you know, so I was, you know, getting ready to go up, get ready for bed, sleep the night through. And I noticed when I came back that the charger was, said that the car, you know, had fully charged and it was good to go. Where do you think that F-Pace was parked when I got up and left the next morning?
How many guesses do I get?
One.
I'm going to go the exact same spot.
Yeah, and guess what wasn't unplugged?
But I will bet depending on how that charger's set up, they might have been paying because the vehicle would not have been accepting electrons. So the charger would realize that.
Yes, I understand this. But what I'm saying is, here's another factor in the issues. Inconsiderate people. Humans, especially it seems like American humans, are inconsiderate. And if it's inconvenient for them and their laziness, they don't do it. In other words, if they park their car and plug it in to charge it, and they're going to bed, they're not going to get up in an hour from their hotel bed or 2 hours or whatever it is and go down and move their car just in case one of the other people driving an electric car staying at that hotel would like to use the charger. There's just a lot of factors here that this needs a lot more time to get sorted out. That's what I'm saying.
Well, what you're saying about the F-Pace is kind of what I was saying, is that once the
vehicle study that I actually saw.
Yeah. Well, once the vehicle stops charging and the charger knows it's stopped charging, or the charger realizes the vehicle's at 100%, a lot of these chargers will then start billing you $25 a minute or $25 every half hour or something for sitting there, not making the charger available. Now, it's not to say that the guy in the F-Pace goes out, unplugs the car, and leaves it there. But if they leave it plugged in overnight and do what you say, if they're getting charged $50 an hour for that to sleep there, and after $2,000 or $3,000 charging bills, they might learn to wake up and move. That's the only thing the electric vehicle companies have going for. Of course, you know, you're going to call your credit card company and contest the charge, and eventually they'll start losing. But you have that one, and there was one other thing I was going to get to before I got into my closing note here. Oh, I made a comment on social media earlier this week. And it was a photo collage of these Ford F-250s and 350s and lifted 4x4s parked in EV spots and taking up all the charger spots and semis blocking these charger spots. And basically these anti-EV people parking in electric charging stations that to prevent the electric vehicles from charging, simply put. And I got thinking, those are revenue generating spaces, and they are specifically designated for these vehicles. Could it not be considered theft because they are preventing these spaces from generating the income? And shouldn't these vehicles then be towed and the owners charged? Because if I drove my semi and parked it right up against the front doors of Walmart, I guarantee you somebody would come and say, you know, because I'm preventing people from entering the building. I think we really need to start reviewing some of these laws about the freaking assholes that are preventing these people with EVs. They're making a choice just because it doesn't agree with you and your rolling coal diesel burning ass. You know, tough shit. And time to start towing you, time to start booting you, and time to start fining you.
It seems that people have forgotten that we have freedoms in this country, and we can peacefully protest things. We can do all of these things, but it seems they forget the caveat to that freedom, which is, so long as you don't infringe upon someone else's rights and freedoms. Seems we've forgotten that part.
Yeah, you can have all the freedoms you want as long as they don't disagree with my freedoms.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I'm going to close with another controversial thing. And you can thank Hunter Biden. You can thank Joe Biden. You can thank their world travels. But I printed out a list of the 20 largest EV manufacturers. And I found this interesting. And that, let's see here. We'll just do the top 10. Number one, BYD, Chinese company. Number two, Tesla, American company. Number three, Volkswagen, German company. Number four, General Motors, American company. Number five, Stellantis, a company based out of the Netherlands. Hyundai Motors, South Korea. Number seven, BMW. Number eight, Geely Auto Group, which also includes Volvo and Lotus, Chinese-based. Mercedes-Benz is number nine, German-based. Number 10, Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi Alliance, also based out of the Netherlands, which is a duplicate, basically, because they're also kind of sort of Stellantis. No, I guess maybe they're not, but... And then if you want to get beyond that, GAC at number 11, Chinese-based. SAIC is actually based out of Virginia. Here's Geely Volvo. I'm sorry. Which would be number 13. Chery, which is number 14, both those being Chinese. Shaanxi. Number 15, Chinese-based. Other, and so who knows where. Dongfeng Motor, Chinese-based at number 16. Ford at number 17, U.S.-based, obviously. Hozon Auto, Chinese-based at number 19. And CHJ Automotive. Couldn't figure out where they were based out of. At number 20. And I came up with roughly 9.5 million electric cars sold. Nine of the top 20 are Chinese companies and produced 4 million of those 9.5 million cars sold. But don't get on TikTok because China's bad.
Are you done?
Huh?
Does that wrap that up?
That wraps that up.
Okay. Because Dana, one of our longtime listeners here, popped in with a comment that I'm trying to figure out. So maybe somebody can clear. I don't. She says, I think this is interesting. A calculation by the European Federation for Transport and Environment found that the lifetime fuel consumption of a traditional car, which I assume is meaning internal combustion engine car, requires a tower of oil barrels as high as a 25-story building. The metals needed to make an EV battery, meanwhile, are about the size of a microwave oven. I'm not sure what Dana's trying to say. Because the metals that make the EV battery are not what power the car, whereas the oil consumption, the fuel consumption, is what powers the vehicle. So I'm not sure the comparison that's trying to be made there. Am I reading it wrong, John? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm kind of confused on that one.
Because beyond the metals needed to make an EV battery, I mean, we need to look at the number of times it needs to be charged to, I mean, just like filling up a car for that, you know, 25-story building of oil, we need to figure out the lifespan of the battery, the a lot of factors that I'm not sure what the European Federation is trying to say.
Yeah, I would have to read that, but if I'm looking at that, they're comparing two entirely different things. The tower of oil is what's powering the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, 25-story buildings. So that would be roughly what? 300 feet high, 250 to 300 feet high. And the metals needed to make an EV battery, meanwhile, also about the size of a microwave ovens.
Ah, now, okay. She just commented EVs require fewer natural resources.
But if you're taking into account what's being said here, the amount of metals or composites to make a fuel tank in a car is much smaller than a microwave oven, or maybe equal to. And that's what we're comparing there. The metals needed to make the battery and the metals needed to make the fuel tank, because that's what each of these are. Batteries are a fuel tank. And a fuel tank's a fuel tank. You have a 25-story tower of oil barrels to make that is the fuel. What is the pile of coal or whatever you're using to make the electricity? That's what I think you need to be comparing here. You know, you're comparing a storage unit against a consumption unit. We either need to compare consumption to or storage.
Yeah, that's the way I read it, John, is that they're, you know, this comparison is the fuel versus, like you say, the storage tank, right? Now, I get, you know, the precious metals that are part of a battery that create the reactions and the transfer of electricity and all of the things that go into that. But you still have to put, when that battery runs down, you still have to put that energy back into it, i.e. an empty gas tank, you need to fill with gas. An empty battery, you need to recharge with electricity. So yeah, I read that the same way, that this is not an apples to apples, this is an apples to oranges. And if we were going to compare the tanks, you're right, John, the gas tank in a car actually uses very little metal anymore.
It used to be metal.
Composites. You know, but if you look at the natural resources, the battery is using like precious metals that are insane to try to get our hands on sometimes.
Yeah, the precious metals used in battery, and everybody talks about the coal used to generate the electricity for the electricity and that. Nobody ever talks about the amount of fresh water that's needed to mine the lithium, because that's how lithium's mined, is great deals of, I think most of us have probably watched Gold Rush out there. You run everything through the shaker and the wash plant and that. It's basically the same thing. You need to use a ton you need to use swimming pools and swimming pools and swimming pools full of water to extract enough lithium for one battery. And then the water is pretty much rendered useless until it goes through all the recycling of the earth, evaporating and that, taking out the impurities, coming back as rainwater before it could potentially even be reused. You're making contaminated material out of fresh water, and fresh water is kind of important, but that's getting into saying EVs are bad or EVs are good. And that's not what this whole episode was about. This episode's about the politicians declaring that EVs are the answer, and we're going to do whatever we can to make you buy EVs. And the reason I wanted to point out that 9 out of 20 of these companies are Chinese is the same administration that's been accused of working with the Chinese, the same administration that says you can't have TikTok, but we're going to go ahead and run our political ads on TikTok, is now saying, hey, we're going to make everything EV, even though they make 50% of the cars in the world that are EVs. And you know who's going to be the quickest to react to this? Is the Chinese. And do you know who is building an automotive manufacturing facility in Mexico right now? BYD. And do you know what happens with whatever we call NAFTA this week? They can start building these cars there and shipping them over. So Don't tell me there's not some funny money out there, as the little corner of the thing says. I kind of hid the sign, but political corruption ahead. I will leave it there. We're a little bit over where we normally like to be. Just a lot of thought process here, a lot of thinking. Just trying to definitely make you aware of, one, that everything's safe until the courts declare it's unsafe, with the beginning and the unfortunate passing of Angela Chow. And the second half about the politics and smolitics. They do it to save your breath. Mean streak or blue streak, they sentence you to death. I mean, if anybody can figure out that song and get it to me, first person could win something. But just trying to make you aware of what's going on. This is an election year, and we got to look at it. And like I said, if certain people get reelected, this is a guarantee. I'm not saying the other side's better, but much as I said two elections ago, that election would determine how the Supreme Court worked out. This election is going to determine how we drive. That's just my personal opinion. I know we don't like to get too political. I think Derek's a little bit tired of my ranting. So I'm going to say,
never.
We'll go ahead and kill it here. We definitely will be back with a fun and interesting topic next week. Unless, of course, somebody does something really stupid again. I'm leaving it to you, Derek.
Like John says stuff on the show that, you know, the CIA or somebody hears, and then no driving gloves is stripped from the airwaves. No.
Alex Jones is still out there. I don't think I've got anything worried about.
Okay, we're good.
Of course, he's got a buck or two more than me.
Yeah. Well, does he throw any more?
Podcasting 2.0. Hit that boost button.
You know what?
Send us, Dana? I can't remember what they're called. Shitoshis.
Yeah, whatever. Do you want to, like, buy the podcast a coffee or buy us a coffee? You just say buy you a coffee. You don't say buy no driving gloves a coffee. So, I mean, all you got to do is, I mean, you guys don't live far away from either one of us. Just come on over to go out to a coffee shop. We'll have a nice day. Drink some coffee.
Give me just a second here, Dana. I'll show you how to do that. I just have to switch a couple of little buttons here.
So while John's doing that and I'm stalling more, remember what I always like to say is, you know, if you guys want to help us out, buy coffee is great. Wow, that, hang on, I got to move. John's moving the screens around on us.
Just go ahead and click that QR code and you can buy
it. Oh, look at that. We got a QR code. And you can buy us a coffee, or better yet, if you like what you hear and, you know, you want to help us out, what I like to say is you can help us grow if you share the show.
And that's it. Now you better get off while you got your chance. Get off that ass. Burn some gas. Because John is out. Thanks, everybody, for watching.